It's time for the annual Word of South Festival in Tallahassee. Dozens of authors and musicians will make appearances all weekend at various venues around town. We hear much more about the event, and Gina Jordan and Tom Flanagan talk to some of the featured artists.
Word of South is a festival of literature and music. It blends writers and musicians for conversations and performances. The festival takes place in Cascades Park this weekend and also showcases artists in various venues around town. Headlining Word of South 2026 is Earth, Wind, and Fire. The band has been a musical institution since 1969. The makeup of the group has gone through a lot of changes over the decades, but the music has remained a staple of America's culture. Earth, Wind, and Fire is among the best-selling artists of all time, with fans buying more than 100 million albums worldwide. The group has 9 Grammy Awards, including Lifetime Achievement, and is a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Earth, Wind, and Fire will play the Adderley Amphitheater Friday night. The next evening, the Currys will take the stage.
I'd like to see the rubber lap, the miles cross the stained line with the summer smile, the road ahead, the past I left behind me.
Word of South has been kind enough to allow the Currys to be a part of the festival since its inception in various forms, and it's allowed us to hook up with cookbook authors and other musicians throughout the years, and it's been a real pleasure being part of it. We're big fans of the marriage of literature and music, and looking forward to being a part of the great weekend.
That's Galen Curry, a member of the indie rock band The Currys, which includes a trio of family members with roots in the Florida Panhandle. They've been performing together for over a decade.
Music has given me a deeper appreciation of the world around me and allowed me to connect to community in ways I never thought was possible before. At Word of South, I'm most looking forward to seeing the performance by Earth, Wind, and Fire. A lot of festivals you'll see Earth and Wind or Fire and Wind, but to see Earth, Wind, and Fire all together in one performance is quite something.
In addition to dozens of musicians, plenty of authors will be featured at various venues, like poet, fiction writer, and FSU professor Sandra Simons. She spoke with WFSU reporter Tristan Wood.
I think of poetry as a genre that allows for a lot of experimentation and freedom. I found really great communities around poetry. And because it's not so driven by the market, like fiction or other, like the movies or anything like that, there's a lot of room for experimentation and fun. So I love that aspect of poetry. I also feel like it's a great space for people to think through relationships, problems, issues that they might be having, and connect with other people. So what I think is amazing about poetry is that it's not linear. You can tell a story that doesn't make a lot of sense, but it makes sense for poetry, if that makes sense.
So, no, that absolutely makes sense. Yeah. You mentioned, you know, finding community and finding connection with other folks. I think that's a good segue to talk about, you know, the Word of South. Why is having this type of event in town is so important?
So one of the things that's exciting is that the Word of the South brings talent to Tallahassee, but also Tallahassee itself is a very talented community. So there's that exchange that happens. And also I think it's great for all ages. So people who are like in high school interested in poetry or fiction or music can go and experience just this wide variety of talented artists. I think it's just very important to have that in our community, and it's just a really wonderful event.
You're involved this year. What are you going to be doing there?
I'm doing a reading with Barbara Hamby, who was actually on my dissertation committee when I was getting my PhD at FSU in creative writing. So she helped me to put together my first poetry manuscript, and it's really great to read with her and talk with her about poetry and just literary things, the literary community. So I'm very excited about that. It feels like it's kind of coming full circle, if you will.
And how does doing a poetry reading like change how poetry works as an art form? Like, what dynamic does reading the poetry add to it?
I'll take this from the student perspective. So, for example, I just taught Allen Ginsberg's America poem, and when the students read it on the page, they tell me when they actually hear it, like hear a recording of it, they really understand it. So, performance is a vital aspect to a lot of poetry. It can really give the poem's life, energy, and a certain meaning. So, in that example, the recording has an audience that's laughing at what he's saying and things like that. And so I think there is like a real place for performance and poetry, and it just can really bring the poems to life.
And an event like Word of the South that's bringing music, literature, poetry together. What do you think bringing all those together into an event, like what does that offer people who attend?
So people think of poetry as separate from music these days, right, in our contemporary world. But actually, poetry has a history of being coupled with music. So, for example, the word lyric comes from the word lyre, which is, a Greek, ancient Greek instrument. And so I think that there is a long relationship between poetry and music. And in the Middle Ages, like troubadour poets put their poems to, it was always coupled with musicians. So the uncoupling of poetry and music is pretty recent in history. So I think that that's quite interesting. But also just thinking of these art forms as they're in conversation with each other as well, and that they're all part of a larger community that is centered around the arts. And one thing that's really wonderful about art is that it creates a space for enjoyment and pleasure, but also conversations about our world. And so that's, I think, another really important function of the arts and humanities.
Let's say someone goes to Word of South that's, never written poetry before and they're inspired by what they hear and they want to go try to make some of their own when they go home. What advice would you give to someone?
Yeah, I think read as much as you can, look up the poets that you liked that inspired you, and then find out who they're reading. A lot of these poets are also on YouTube. You can look at their performances. And another thing that I think is great for younger people is to share that writing with their friends, so they can form, groups of friends that you could share the writing, and I think that creates a kind of community. So it's a living art form. That's exactly like what you're saying, Tristan. That's exactly how poetry and other art forms advance. They don't die with a generation. It's exactly what happens. Someone sees someone read or hears someone read, and they think, oh, I could do that. That's what keeps the art form alive.
That was poet Sandra Simons with Tristan Wood. Our Tom Flanagan is talking to authors, including the festival's youngest. He sits down with 12-year-old Ace Robertson. Plus, he holds a roundtable with authors about their writing process.
I'm Ace Robertson, and I'm in sixth grade, and I like playing baseball and hanging out with my brother and sister.
Okay, and for the benefit of folks who don't know the Far East Side, what school do you go to, Ace?
Swift Creek.
Of course you do. Do you like it?
Yeah, it's fun.
Well, I gotta ask you then, Ace, how did you get into writing? Was this something you always kind of liked to do, or you got an assignment at school, or how did this happen?
Well, I liked reading books, and I thought it would be cool to have my own book, so.
Yeah, but you gotta pick a topic before you start writing. So,
Yeah.
what about this Mr. Bossy character? Where did he come from?
My aunt, she was struggling with Mr. Bossy, and she didn't know who he was, so I made this book to help her and other kids who don't know who he is. Anxiety was a big thing for me, so I just thought anxiety was bad, so I just imagined that it was a mean thing in my brain.
So you just figured out what would be a good way or a couple of good ways to handle something like that?
Yeah.
All right. But do you see any Mr. Bossies, maybe that are picking on other kids at school? And what's mm-hmm. that like?
Yeah. Actually, today I saw a kid. His knee was hurt, and he was, like, crying, and he wanted to go home. And I'm like, it wasn't that bad, too. And I'm like, he must have a Mr. Bossie.
Well, you go through all the trouble of putting this thing together, mm-hmm. and then suddenly you find out it's not going to be just a fun little project, you know, and mom and dad look at it, and your brother and sister hate you for it, or whatever happens.
Yeah.
But you are going to be kind of showing it off to a whole bunch of folks this coming weekend. How'd you find out about that?
Well, my mom, she came up and said, you're going to be at a festival on Saturday.
Was that a little bit scary, or was that a happy feeling you got from that, or how did you react?
At first it was scary, and then she started teaching me how to, you know, talk and stuff, and then it felt more better.
The whole idea, of course, for Word of South is what? Your mom told you about that, so what's the festival supposed to be for, really?
Well, I'm going to answer some questions and read the book.
What if someone wants a copy signed? You're going to do that, too?
Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah.
Anything in the pipeline for future books that you're going to do, Ace? Now that you got this one done, you can't just stop at one. What are you going to do next?
I'm going to do, like, a middle school book, and because the book I have made is for elementary, kind of. And in middle school, it's different. A little Mr. Bossie gets a little sneakier, so I'm going to write one about that.
Oh, so we're going to kick him up a notch and come up with some new strategies in dealing with him, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tell about the artist who did the work here in your book to illustrate it.
Yeah, Charlotte Spinks. When she wrote this book, she was in high school, and she's a very great artist.
Yeah, it really kind of brings those words to life. So you think you may collaborate with her again for the next book?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you happen to be down at Cascades Park someone by the name of Ace Robertson talking about bullying and the overthrow of the mean, ugly, and nasty, horrible Mr. Bossie, this is the guy you need to talk to, right?
Yep.
From the Robertson Ranch off of Chairs Crossroad, we adjourn to the WFSU studios to talk with some more local literary stars, Mary Jane Riles, Susan Cerulean, Anne Meisenzahl, and Mary Ann Lindley. The prospect of sitting down and going, okay, I'm going to crank out something that ultimately is going to be 200-300 more pages is just beyond daunting. It is terrifying. So I want to get some background on how you guys got into it and why you do what you do. So, Mary Jane, how did you get into the writer's biz? Was this something that you fell into, you were pushed into? How did it happen?
Both, by my mother. She had me reading nursery and memorizing nursery rhymes when I was 4 and 5 years old. So I think I was reading already, but I didn't know that I was reading. And then she got me these 19th century women's novels from Great Britain and said, read these. And I did. I didn't think anything of it. And she just thought writing was everything. She'd been an English major herself.
So you didn't exactly cut your teeth on the little golden book series, right?
I guess not.
Okay. What about you, Susan? How did you plummet into this thing?
I plummeted when I was working for what used to be the Florida Game and Freshwater Fish Commission. And they had a magazine called Florida Wildlife. I don't know if that's still in print. And I found that I liked writing about Florida wildlife and wild places more than I did doing budgets or supervising people. And then it evolved from there.
And your story, how'd you do it?
Well, I think I started with journaling as a teenager to help me process all my confusion as a teenage young woman. And that led into reading poems, writing poems, starting to take poetry classes. I never took much English or had an English degree until my 50s. But prior to that, I just wrote all the time and got feedback and joined little workshops and things like that. So I've been doing it for a long time.
And you, Marianne, of course, you were on the journalistic side of the equation almost from the get-go.
I started writing for the Hometown Weekly when I was 16. And even that was a late start because I really started keeping diaries and journals when I was when I could actually write, you know, which was six or seven. I grew up in a house without books except for the Encyclopedia Britannica. So it was my teachers at school, in our little country school, that had the library. And then my English teacher in high school, who would forego the grammar workbook for the most part, and got us right into reading poetry and memorizing poetry, like Thanatopsis and all kinds of long-winded, beautiful poetry. So I just started, I don't know, I think you're born to it, maybe.
Certainly, Mary Jane, with that background that you had growing up, it seemed almost fait accompli you were going to write a lot.
I had no idea I was going to do that. I mean, I guess I just started, like everyone else, doing journal stuff. And then I went for literature as an undergraduate. And then when I became a graduate student, I decided I wanted to do this thing.
You, Susan, you seem to have something that you have focused on, as you said, when it comes to nature and the environment and where we live. Because, boy, there's no lack of stuff to write about here in North Florida, South Georgia.
The first book that I wrote was called The Florida Wildlife Viewing Guide, and that was for the commission, and it was telling people where to go in Florida to see wild things. And I think that that idea of a guidebook kind of must have gotten stuck in my head, because all of my books are kind of a guide either to this place or to what's going on with the birds, swallowtail kites, shorebirds. And then I started to put together, well, what if I combined something like caring for my father with his dementia with what strikes me as the dementia of our culture to destroy the things that we depend on for our lives. So I like to think of ways to weave together different kinds of stories.
And what keeps you in that genre? Because that is one of the most fiendishly difficult kinds of writing to do. At least that's what a guy by the name of David Kirby tells me. Now, I don't know if I should listen to him or not, but what do you think?
Well, David Kirby was a big inspiration for me. He was one of my first professors when I studied the MFA in creative writing at FSU. He and Barbara Hamby and Elizabeth Stuckey French and Jimmy Kimbrell, lots of wonderful folks, got me inspired. I mean, I was already writing, going, doing workshops, producing stuff, but the experience at FSU really helped me hone those skills and get excited about communicating through poetry. So that was a blast. I guess what you're saying, Marianne, or maybe it was you, said it comes naturally. It's sort of part of, it's a way of experiencing the world, is to think in poetic terms, you know, like how can I really describe this sunset or this moment or this feeling?
Is there poetry in journalism, Marianne, do you think? Can there be?
I wanted to talk about that a little, because when I got involved with these women, Mary Jane Riles and Sue Cerulean and Anne Mesenthal, here I was sitting with women who are writing literature. They're taking information and turning it into literature, to beautiful writing. I mean, that's what's going on with these three. So I was a journalist, always more fact-oriented, details, information. But for me, back in the maybe 80s or so, when something called the literary journalism came up, that was Joan Didion and Tom Wolfe and Hunter Thompson. And so suddenly, journalists were also writing with a kind of literary storytelling flair. And I found that to be just, that was my sweet spot. That was where I felt at home, not ever planning to write books like the women I'm so happy to be knowing better and sitting here in this room with. There was a bridge, definitely. And I think some of the best writers in journalism, the ones with that poetic hunch about how they go about their writing, are sports writers. I mean, traditionally, the sports writers have been kind of the rock stars of storytelling. I always thought it was because they didn't have anything of great consequence to discuss.
A little frustration going on there. The subject
but
matter
But I respect
is,
them.
But you can have a great collection of prose or poetry in your own notes on your own laptop, and yet if it doesn't get out to the big wide world, it's kind of, well, gee, this was a neat exercise, but how can we take it to the next level? And it used to be that you would find an editor and a publisher and some kind of mechanism for doing this sort of thing. You would hopefully ink a deal with Harcourt, Brace, Jovanovich, or Random House, or one of these big publishing houses, and you'd be off to fame and fortune. It doesn't seem to be working like that anymore. So I don't know. Let's start with you, Mary Jane, because this is kind of right up your alley.
Yeah, it is. I really wanted to talk about this, too. The very first book I did was Melanie's. Melanie is in my writing group. And she writes beautiful little essays all the time. And she brought a fairy tale to us. And she called it a fairy tale for grown-ups. And she read it to us. And usually workshops are like, well, you need to, you know, you need a comma here. And you need, I think this paragraph should be over here. And but this one was, oh, Melanie. Everyone said that. And I thought, I've got to publish this book, you know. And so I did. I figured out how to, and Lynn Knight put it together. It was gorgeous. You know, she just did it with her art talent, because there aren't a whole lot of, I mean, good luck with going into New York, because 99.9% of unsolicited submissions are rejected in New York, and only 1% to 2% of people who go with an agent get published. And I have to say, they're often... they all kind of look alike on the outside, because it's really like push it through quickly. We need to make a lot of money.
How do you get published, Susan? You've had so many, and again, focusing on the environment and nature and wildlife and all of that.
I was really lucky back in the, like around 2014, I met an editor at the University of Georgia Press. They accepted. There was really not much money involved. My book about swallowtail kites called Tracking Desire. And then I just kept sending manuscripts to them, and they published three of my books altogether. But when Mary Jane started this press here, I had put together several anthologies, local anthologies here, Between Two Rivers and Unspoiled. And I love the community feel of a local press. I just love working with my friends around the table in the living rooms.
But do the books still sell?
Well, mine hasn't come out yet. You'll have to ask my friends.
We'll do our best.
but as far as yours, Anne, again, that's poetry. Is that a harder sell to get through the publisher over here?
Well, not through this publisher, but through all the others. After I finished my MFA, I started working on a novel, which I actually regret that I hadn't studied fiction writing at all. But I took years, and I got there with the help of Mary Jane workshopping it and other people reading it. And I gave myself a goal of reaching 100 agents to see if I could find an agent for the novel. And this is my novel called Long Time Gone. It's sort of a niche piece about a girl's spiritual journey, and nobody wanted it. Nobody. Finally, I was able to find someone that Mary Jane recommended me to him as well.
It was a beautiful novel.
He helped me find a very small press, and so I got that book published. I never had any designs on publishing poetry, frankly. But a friend of mine, Christine, from a workshop, said that she wanted to put together a manuscript. Did I want to work on it with her? And I said, well, okay. I have hundreds of poems. I'm sure I could find 50. And then Mary Jane asked if I had a manuscript. And there it was. I had one in this beautiful community spirit that you're talking about, Sue, to publish it. And then was there along the whole way along the journey of making it happen. So I'm very grateful.
And I have to ask, did you really send it to 100 agents?
100. Wow. Not the poetry, though, the novel, but yeah.
Wow. It's a tough world out there.
It's tough. I think they tend to go with names that are recognized, with best-selling type topics, you know, the romance fiction and the mystery novels and that sort of thing. So it's just a hard nut to crack.
Well, it was tougher for you, Marianne, because you used to be able to crank out something on the computer, and it goes to composing, or straight downstairs to the big old Goss press, and chunk, and out it would come.
Well, it went through an excruciating editing process first before it went right down to the press. So, which was similar to what we have here with our local publishing. We have a lot of different writers who are reading our material. But I'm thinking, as you all are talking about, why do we write? Do we write because we want an audience and we want to sell? Or do we write because we really have a message and we want it to get out, but mostly we need to identify it ourselves. And Anne said, you know, you said something I've said in my own thoughts, which is writing is how I find out what I think. Mm-hmm. It clarifies things for me. Or material that you have, Sue, that you've researched, you have massive amounts of material. And finally you say, how can I make this beautiful, fun, entertaining, readable, even to myself? Then you sort of do your magic wand and you sit down. And I wrote 3 columns a week for many, many, many years. So I was really on a roll all the time. You know, I was up and down, one day up, next day, do it again tomorrow. That's what we used to say at the end of the day. We'll do it again tomorrow. We just started over.
Well, it is so great to have these extraordinary folks here with us today. Mm-hmm. So Mary Jane Ryle, Susan Cerulean, and Misa Zoll and Mary Ann Lindley, thank you all for coming and talking and giving us some insights as to what you guys are all about and what you have produced, which is awesome.
Thank you, Tom.
Hope to see you this weekend at the Word of South Festival. I'm Tom Flanagan with Tom About Town.